All right, welcome to the Hemposium stage. My name is Russ Belville. I'm the host of Normal Show Live, just like it says right there. Normal Show Live. We are Normal's daily talk radio program, available through iTunes and live on the internet. We have all sorts of little handouts there if you'd like some information on that. And I'm moderating and participating in this panel, which is Cannabis Hemp, Growing Awareness in the Media. And we've got all sorts of diverse media personalities up here. Let me start by introducing Justin Jenkins here. He is a dual threat, as he is the associate editor of the Oregon Cannabis Connection, one of our industry newspapers, and the host of Medford's Rogue Cannabis Radio on KSKQ 89.5 FM. So he's a radio host as well. Give him a hand here. So we got radio and we've got news media, you know, the print media up on stage. Next to him, we have Ngayo Bilim, who, in addition to being one of the best cannabis comedians out there, is also the publisher of West Coast Cannabis, which is one of the major magazines here. So magazine publishing, we've got all areas of the media covered here, and stand-up, which is a type of media, right? You know, getting directly to the people, tricking them through their funny bone, right? We also have Sam Chapman from Students for Sensible Drug Policy at the University of Oregon. Go Ducks, working in student media, and last I heard they were up 13-0 on the University of Nevada, Reno, which, as a Boise State alumnus, I couldn't love more. Thank you for kicking Nevada's butt. Appreciate that, Sam. And also here on the podium as well is Melissa Ballin, who is the co-director of The Emperor Wears No Clothes, you know, the movie about Jack Herer. She was a co-director of that movie, and so we've got such a diverse panel here. Student activism, we've got motion pictures, magazines, radio. I'm a radio host as well, and newspapers. So we'll start off with, let's start with Melissa. We'll start over there. Go ahead and grab that mic there. And Melissa, just tell them a little bit about your background here in the cannabis industry and how things have changed since you made Emperor.
Right, absolutely. Well, thank you all for being here because there's a lot of excitement going on at Portland Hempstock 2011. And so thank you for taking the time to come to the Hemposium and really activate, because that is a big part of what we're trying to get people to do, is to enjoy themselves, but also really get the message out to the people. And so all of you here then can tell 10 of your friends, as we're going to get into with social media. And this is how that going viral or the message spreads in a positive way. But I had the honor as a filmmaker of meeting and working with Jack Herer and Eddie Lepp. And it's really moving to me to be here at Portland Hempstock, because this is where Jack Herer delivered his last speech. And may he rest in peace. He had a heart attack here 2 years ago that he never recovered from, and unfortunately died on tax day, April 15th, to leave the last message that we should not have taxation without representation. So down the rabbit hole I went, needless to say, in Jack's absence, and had an amazing journey meeting some of the most incredible freedom fighters and members of the media on the planet, some really sophisticated and educated people that are open-minded, to find out what was actually true all these years, that we could pay our taxes with cannabis hemp for 2 years in the 1800s, that the first American flag was made out of hemp, that the first two drafts of the Declaration of Independence were drafted on cannabis hemp. And these are all things that have been sort of buried away or hidden by our media, our mainstream media, and our schools. And they're not spoken about in the education. And Jack Herer was very upset that the Smithsonian doesn't acknowledge hemp. They just say natural fibers. And so it's not just hiding from history. It's actually obfuscating and rewriting history, which we're seeing a lot of, you know, because some of you are familiar with my social media campaign, Vote for Change with Shepard Fairey, which was the most phenomenal social media campaign in history. We got 3 million downloads in 2 weeks. And the important thing is keeping the message going. Jack Herer would tell you, you have to say it again and again and again. And then when you think you can't say it anymore, you have to say it one more time. And so those of us that are already activated, we know these factoids from Jack Herer's Emperor Wears No Clothes, and we can get them like cocktail party fodder at jackherer.com. And there's countless evidences of cannabis hemp as medicine, fiber, fuel, paper, and countless other uses throughout history for 5,000 years. And you can get those examples at jackharer.com. What I'm excited about with the forward-thinking people here and then the reach that we're going to have to reach everyone else is to unify the message from our community, from the hemp community, and also to create a better network through mainstream media, because somewhere there's a disconnect, because we can sit here and talk till we're blue in the face about how it really can save the planet. And we are going to talk about it weekly on the radio, actually, with Russ. But we need to get that message beyond, and hopefully that's what we're going to talk about. And everybody here has been helping me get the message of the movie out to the people, which will be coming out on 420 of this year in honor of Jack. But we have to do more so that we're not just talking to each other. So we have to figure out how to, and they're starting to listen, so that's the good news. But today we're going to talk about how we're going to take that the rest of the way.
All right. Now, Melissa, what year was that film initially?
Jack and I co-directed the... there's actually a documentary about Jack called The Emperor of Hemp, which was made 10 years ago. And that gives you a fun background of Jack and his crazy adventures and 20 years of reintroducing hemp for victory to the government. So sometimes we have to just keep going like an engine of change. But Jack and I co-directed the short documentary in 2009, and it qualified for Academy consideration. It was his last work, and he was talking about it here at Portland Hempstock. I was in Amsterdam when he had the heart attack. And we're now, in his memory, completing the feature film, which includes Governor Gary Johnson and Be Real and a lot of amazing activists and hopefully all of you. So we'll talk later about how you can be involved in the movie. But we really thank you, because so much happened from Jack's death to continuing the movie. You know, and this is one of the things that's such a testimonial to hemp activists, is we have not given up since 1937, but we're at the point where we really are at the tipping point. We can do this for Jack and for Michelle Rainey and for Linda Sentai and for Ben Mazel, who I had the pleasure of meeting here last year. So may he rest in peace. The importance is that their message live on, and that we not let it be forgotten, that we not let them hide it under the rug anymore, because we know the truth.
Right on. Thank you, Melissa. And, you know, yeah, give it up for Melissa Ballin. Absolutely.
Thanks. Hemp Hooray.
You know, as a documentary filmmaker, you know, making that documentary, and she mentioned, you know, The Emperor of Hemp, the one, the previous one, the Peter Coyote narration on that, there is no better time to get educated on cannabis, marijuana law reform through documentary films than now. On Netflix right now, there's got to be at least a dozen great documentaries out there to check out. And we're going to be showing one of them later on tonight at around 7:30. It's a brand new one out called A Normal Life, and it features a lot of us in this movie, a lot of us marijuana activists in it. So if you come back around 7:30, we'll give you a look at, you know, what's going on in the, you know, documentary motion pictures right now. Okay, let's move on to Sam Chapman from University of Oregon, Students for Sensible Drug Policy. SSDP is a great organization. Aaron Houston's running it now, and SSDP.org is the website focusing on, you know, all of the things that are important to young people, because, you know, when it comes to the war on marijuana, it is young people that get busted for it, largely. And the other thing about Sam and his generation that I'm so jealous about is they've grown up. I mean, you know, an incoming college freshman right now, pretty much they've grown up knowing that there's legal marijuana somewhere, kind of. I mean, there's medical in California or Oregon or wherever. And so they're not burdened by that same mindset that I was burdened with coming through college. And the intertubes, they've got the internets, man. They got so much they can do with that. And I hope he speaks a little bit to that. This is Sam Chapman.
Yeah, thanks, Russ. So, I mean, as far as one of the things I'm doing right now is actually working with the Oregon Marijuana Policy Initiative as their social media consultant. And people always ask me, so, I mean, what are you doing? Like social media. The truth is, it's just networking with people, and it's really fun, to be working with OMPI and, reaching out to students. That's pretty much, my main focus, at least here today, is to talk about the importance of getting the youth involved. I mean, as Russ said, I think actually that's one of the reasons why there aren't as many students involved is because we didn't go through those burdens of those times, and we think we just have it easy. You know, look how many young people are here. And then look how many young people are here in this audience right here. You know, there's the majority, the 90-95% of all the activists, probably a lot more, are, you know, at least over the age of, like, you know, 25 or 30. To me, that's kind of alarming. You know, students are here enjoying themselves. You know, they think they just have it easy. They think that, you know, the liberties that they have, the freedoms to be here and, you know, enjoy themselves recreationally if they want. I'm mostly talking about college students. you know, they do take that for granted. So I'll talk a little bit about what Students for Sensible Drug Policy is. We are a national nonprofit organization that has about 150 chapters across the country at different colleges, community colleges. We even have some small high school chapters, but it's a little more lucrative at that level. But basically, our motto is this: we don't condemn or condone drug use. But we recognize that it happens, and we recognize that people need to be educated about drug use, you know, and this is talking about, you know, kind of the whole drug policy reform movement. We don't just focus on marijuana. Obviously, that's the most attractive subject for young students and the best subject to where they won't necessarily feel it's a taboo as opposed to, you know, maybe other drug use. Yeah, so how do we motivate the youth? That's kind of the bottom line question that I've been facing for the last couple of years I've been doing drug policy work, and it's just starting to kind of emerge in my head, and we're really going to see it in 2012. The importance of social media in any campaign has you know, exponentially grown over the last 2 years. I think Obama's campaign, the 2012 campaign, is projected to be $1 billion. I guarantee you at least 30-40% of that is going straight to social media advertising. You know, he's been losing some of his pull with, you know, his you know, leftist liberal base, and I really think that you know, if he wants to continue targeting the youth, he's going to go through social media. And it's the same thing for marijuana politics, you know, here in Oregon and nationally. You know, Students for Sensible Drug Policy has been changing policy at, you know, a pretty pretty high level. You know, we went and lobbied Congress in spring, I think, and there was about 400 of us from across the country, and we went to Congress. We each went to our representatives and sat down and talked with them. And, you know, we really got a feel for politics. And, you know, I guess it's not necessarily everyone's cup of tea to really, like, you know, a lot of people get nervous speaking and whatnot, especially people of importance. It was a great experience for those of us who are involved. And, you know, it's really inspired me to continue working in this drug reform movement, at least here in Oregon, until I decide to leave, which...
Why would you?
Grad school, sorry. But yes, always an Oregonian.
Right on. Thank you, Sam. And you know, I'm glad you mentioned the thing about the college students, especially like here in Oregon, being a little lackadaisical about it, because it's like, well, under an ounce is a ticket. You know, I got a friend who's got a medical card. Mm-hmm. I never get really hassled or busted. So let me relate a story that comes from my home state of Idaho. In my home state of Idaho, we had a contest once on my show. The former drug czar, John Walters, came out one time and he said, the chance of finding a nonviolent first-time marijuana user in prison is like finding a unicorn. You find one, you'll have a story, because they just don't exist. So we decided to have a contest called Find the Marijuana Unicorn, and the winner would be, who could we find first-time nonviolent offender who did the most time for the least weed? Right? Who would find the most time for the least weed? And the winner was this young college student, Idaho Falls, Idaho, going to school at Idaho State University. And she was in a apartment where there was a bong, not a used bong, a brand new clean bong. There was no weed in the house, no weed on her person. She does not smoke weed. Nobody in the apartment had weed. She was the friend of a friend who was visiting a friend who lived in the apartment. because she was in a room where there was a clean bong, and Idaho has a statute that has to do with frequenting a place where known drug activity is taking place. She did 15 days in jail from the day before Christmas to after New Year's, 15 days in jail for no weed and just being in a place where there was a certain type of a piece of glass. Those are the kids that are motivated to change some marijuana laws. Let me tell you, I'm going to the Idaho Hope Fest in like 2 weeks. They're having their first ever hemp fest in Boise, Idaho. They're definitely motivated. And I like to tell those stories so that the Oregon kids that are puffing tough at the U of O and thinking there's no big deal, they got to know that the college students in other states don't got it so good. All right, let's move on to Ngaio Bealum. You know him, you love him. You can't get enough of him. And here he is from West Coast Cannabis Magazine. And take it away, Ngaio.
Hey! Woo, West Coast Cannabis. That's me. I'm the editor and publisher of West Coast Cannabis Magazine. We've been out for, I think our first issue was March 2008. We put out about 40,000 issues a month, mostly from Stockton to Seattle. Sometimes it takes them a while to get up north here, but you can find them in Southern Oregon and Northern California pretty often. Our whole deal, the whole thing with media, at least advocacy media, is to inform and inspire. You know what I'm saying? We try to let everybody know. One of the reasons I put West Coast Cannabis Magazine together was a lot of times if something's going on in Oregon, cats in California don't hear about it for a minute. If something's happening, I mean, the internet makes it a little different, but there's still a lot of things, you know? There's still a lot of information to share that you can't always get while sitting at your computer for 10 minutes. And we just want people to come together and learn. I told Doug Hyatt, one of the lawyers up in Seattle, I said, knowledge is power. And he said, shared knowledge is shared power. And I took that to heart. So we can share knowledge and power and work together. And really, increasingly, this battle for cannabis freedom is becoming a local political thing. It's not so much a statewide or a national issue, at least in California, because now it's coming down to county by county fights. You fight to keep it in your county. You fight to keep it in your city. And maybe some technique that they're using in Fresno can be applied in the Rogue River Valley. You know what I'm saying? And so that's the thing that everybody needs to work together on that. And we want to, and another thing is sometimes it's like, how do you talk to the squares? You know what I'm talking about? How do you talk to people who may be open-minded about cannabis, but don't really have any knowledge or background, only what they've been told, the other propaganda. Give them some of the good propaganda. I suggest West Coast Cannabis Magazine. Buy an ad. Anybody got any questions? I'm not really long-winded. It's kind of funny. I can stand in front of a stage and tell you jokes for hours and hours, but like if you ask me to just speak on some shit, I get shy.
I'll throw one at you here.
All right,
you
know, lay it on me.
We've got a lot of magazines now. You know, before
buy an ad, please buy an ad
and buy an ad.
Support. I'm serious. You can buy a business card ad for $100 a month. Okay, go ahead.
That's right. Support. You know, for the longest time,
cooperative,
you know,
economics.
For the longest time, you know, there was one magazine out, High Times, and now there's so many magazines out that are more specialized, you know, for just the West Coast. There's, you know, Rosebud, there's Kush, there's all these different magazines that are out there. So is it becoming harder and harder, you know, like you say, and buy an ad? Is it
buy
becoming
an ad.
Harder and harder to get that business and support because of the diversity and the more magazines coming out?
First, let me say that it's freaking awesome.
Yeah.
It was definitely much easier when we started in 2008 when the LA Weekly wasn't taking ads for medical cannabis dispensaries. The Sacramento News and Review wasn't taking ads for medical cannabis dispensaries. You know what I'm saying? There was the Journal for the Education of Medical Marijuana. But other than that, that was it.
Yeah.
You know? And so once we came in with my drive, my fucking Nissan up and down the coast, handing out magazines business model, we got traction pretty quickly. And then there's definitely been a lot more. Which is great, though. Spread the word is my whole point, you know, and I'm down for everybody to do well. But it's a challenge. And then also, you know, some. I mean, there were a lot of factors that went to it. So, one, and this is just my personal business. Okay, but the point is, so, one, there was a lot of things went into it. There's a lot more clubs, all the weeklies. Everybody's going after the cannabis industry money. Everybody sees that there's money in the cannabis industry, and they want to kind of joke and pretend, but the news media, all the newspaper, all the print media, those guys are scrambling for advertisers. And so now they're like, oh, yeah, we'll take your ad. The Sacramento Bee is taking ads for medical cannabis dispensaries now. You know what I'm saying?
Mainstream papers.
Sacramento Business Journal is taking ads for medical marijuana dispensaries. It's a whole different industry. So that's definitely been a thing. And then there's also, like I said, it's becoming a local battle, right? All the clubs in Los Angeles, this has been 4 or 5 years, they're still in court. Still in court. San Diego's going back to court. Fresno's in court. All that stuff costs money for lawyers. And once you start spending money on lawyers, your advertiser guy, he doesn't always get his check first, right? I'm not keeping you. I'm keeping you busy, but I'm not keeping you from getting shut down. So, but it's still, it's good advocacy, community support, you know, and spread the word and everything like that, and be involved yourselves. Get a blog or something.
Yeah,
write shit. Write me an article.
Jello Biafra said, "Be the media." Right.
Right. Like Salvador Dali said, "I am drugs."
And Guy O'Bealum, everyone from West Coast Cannabis. And we'll wrap up here with Justin Jenkins again.
Yay, Justin!
Doing radio and doing local newspaper, you know, the Oregon Cannabis Connection. So he's got, you know, two worlds to talk about here. And take it away, Justin.
Hey, how's it going? I actually just want to start off by saying it is a pleasure to be up here with you guys. It's seriously, I mean...
I
want to
be on your show.
We'll talk. Always looking for guests. Basically, I am the associate editor of Oregon Cannabis Connection, a periodical that was just started last June. We started with about 8,000 copies. We are now at about 30,000 copies throughout the entire state of Oregon in about 1 year.
Wow.
We've been at the same, actually it was 1 year. We bumped it up.
Almost quadruple.
Yeah.
Happened to us.
The minds of you people are insatiable. I love it. I wanted to basically say, I mean, especially your point, I came from Minnesota about a year ago, a little over a year ago, June, actually, of 2010. My wife and I were living in Minnesota, and I was the president. She was the vice president of Normal. Little plug for you, Russ. Thank you.
I've heard of them.
We were in a small, not a small university, actually. It was a town that grew from about 35,000 during the summer to about 100,000 in the school time. There was three separate colleges in Winona, Minnesota. And Winona, Minnesota.
Don't you know?
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you about some crappies sometime if you want.
Oh, definitely crappies, yeah.
But when I was out there, you know, the media is, I wanted to say that I knew all you guys before I moved out here. You know, the media is a powerful thing. And I understood that when I took over. That's one of the reasons I live here now, is because I try to utilize the media a little to my avail, and the police caught wind of my existence and let me know that they existed as well numerous times. So I moved out here, and I met Keith Manser, who is the owner, half owner, and the editor of Cannabis Connection, along with his girlfriend Christy. Been working for them ever since. My first initiation into the pool of marijuana activism was actually, besides Normal out in Minnesota, was the Normal Conference in 2010, where basically I had to start sewing my lip shut because my jaw was dangling. And I turn a corner and, you know, there's Ed Rosenthal, or, you know, there's Irvin Rosenfeld I got to meet there. And, you know, once again, the names, I knew you guys before I ever came out here. And we realized that with Oregon Cannabis Connection as well. And we realized that one of the biggest home bases of the marijuana movement now is officially Oregon. Truly is. I personally believe that we somehow, you know, California is and always will be close to my heart as some of the people who stood up at first. But Oregon, you blow me away. It seriously does. And, yeah.
I would like to say, I've been traveling up and down the West Coast doing comedy and hip activism for 20 years. And Justin has a point. The exponential growth in the past 3 or 4 years of the cannabis industry in Oregon, especially Southern Oregon, the Rogue River Valley, the Illinois Valley, those guys have gone buck wild.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's great. Portland, even Seattle. I mean, the West Coast is crazy. I mean, 10 years ago, you could get heroin easier than you could get weed in Seattle. Right? And now, you can't swing a dead bong without somebody offering you some pot anywhere on the West Coast. So, and one of those things that ties into is the whole sensible Washington, sensible Oregon, sensible California. Everybody's working together to try to get something passed on all the whole West Coast. And that's fantastic because there's power in numbers, and we'll, you know, everybody tweet and blog and shit about it. But also, California's still pretty dope. I find what happens is, since California has been one of the pioneers and on the vanguard of a lot of things in the cannabis, in the medical cannabis and the cannabis freedom movement, they can often be used as a template as what to do and what not to do when dealing with authority figures or when crafting laws and initiatives, because they've already gone through and faced a lot of the pitfalls and hurdles. That's what I'm saying. And, but anytime you want to meet at the border and match a bowl, I'm with it. All right, so there we go.
Do you want to add something else?
Yeah. I just wanted to thank everybody and ask them to continue to activate the message. So we're talking a lot about the West Coast. We make a lot of jokes that the West Coast is the best coast, but we also want to get everybody activated for Deschedule Cannabis Today, because we know that there are so many people like Eddie Lepp and Mark Emery and Brian Eppes, and the list goes on and on, like these college students that are unjustly being held as prisoners of war on a war on drugs, that could be changed if on a federal level we reschedule or deschedule cannabis, because it's definitely a medicine, as the doc is going to talk about, and it definitely can phytoremediate the soil. So we have a big issue with Fukushima, and nobody is talking about the fact that for 20 years we've been using hemp to phytoremediate Chernobyl, and it's working, and it's the only thing that's been working. So why do we have to wait for Kevin Costner to come in with another like fancy contraption when we have hemp and nobody's talking about it? I would like to see some congressional meetings talking about that. I would like to see some committees giving meaningful consideration. And I would like to see, because Jack Ehrer said we should vote and we should register to vote, but we should also run for office. And as Ngayo said, in terms of write your own articles and submit them, I would like to see more letters to the editor in the Wall Street Journal, in the LA Times, in the Rolling Stone, besides just the picture of Henry Hemp and I puffing tough at a party. I want to see pictures of Gary Johnson running for president. Why are debates going on without Willie Nelson's Teapot Party candidates? Where is Gary Johnson getting the equal time to these crackpots? So I want to see Gatewood Galbraith getting attention for his race for governor of Kentucky. And we can support that. You know, I can't vote in Kentucky, but I can blog, I can tweet, I can phone a friend, I can Facebook, and I can let people know, even if I, you know, didn't know anybody in Kentucky, of the thousands of Facebook friends that I have, somebody knows somebody in Kentucky. So this way we're activating the message and getting it out, instead of spending time with he said that she said that we said, fuck you. Instead, let's say hemp can save the planet. Let's get a unified message out that is focused and direct and positive and can transcend all of this debunked information, because we're still fighting DARE commercials from when I was in high school that are using that monkey study that we know was about asphyxiation and not brain cells. So I want to see the medical system and the legal system and the legislative system catch up with the truth. And the only way that we can do that, oddly enough, I think, is by tweeting about it. I guess. I don't know. So let's tweet. Let's just keep tweeting. Because today, Libya is free. And I did not think I would see that day. So I wish Jack Harrer was here with us to see the day that cannabis hemp is descheduled and legal on a federal level. But I know that he will be puffing tough with us from wherever he is when it happens.
Yeah, actually, I have some good news for a couple of your points, actually. I'm working with Americans for Safe Access, which is actually the... Yeah, I have so much compassion for medical marijuana patients. It's not even funny. So I'm doing some work for ASA right now, and it's social media work. And actually, I wasn't aware that this bill is getting thrown around on Capitol Hill right now. But HR 1983 is working to reschedule cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. So just want to throw that out there. And then the second thing that you had mentioned was the DARE campaigns. And the good news on that is we are actually seeing that go away as well. Actually, partly and thanks to Students for Sensible Drug Policy, the DC anti-drug campaign has been reduced to zero, thanks to some of the advocacy that we've been doing with a lot of the representatives on the Hill. So I just wanted to spread some good news in response to what you were saying. Yeah.
And you can tweet us at Jack Harrer Hemp.
All right, and we got to wind up this panel here. Our next panel, Why Be Normal, will be coming up. So I want to finish off with Justin to finish off his thoughts there.
Yeah, basically, I wanted to say one more thing. Like I said, I'm from Minnesota. I'm from in the Midwest. If you guys don't treat the West Coast like the world's largest blowhorn, they ain't going to hear you in Middle America. And that's one of the most major things you have to do. And I wanted to say one thing about one of the greatest things we have right now in our arsenal is podcasting and being able to broadcast around the world. Never got to say anything about I also have my radio show, Rogue Canvas Radio. It's on KSKQ. You can stream it live at kskq.org every Tuesday night from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock. And you guys can start your own podcast and spread your information around the world. People pick that stuff. You won't believe how many people I bump into a day. Like, you guys got a podcast? You know, I like, yes, you know, that's a great thing. It really is. And so, yeah, like I said, yell loud from the West Coast so the rest of the world can hear you, because it is making change and it started over here.